Today is Thursday, December the 7th, 2017. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Shir on Parshas Vayeshev and Chanukah.
Thank you for coming. And I'd like to tell you what an honor it is to have my Macha Tunim. Both of them here. What a nice thing to be surrounded by family. I just would like to say publicly happy birthday to you yesterday. Rabbi Gutstein's I think he was about 22 yesterday. Is that right? 23. And I want to welcome the Devorins back also. Thank you very much for bringing the desserts for all of us. It's so much appreciated, and I want to mention that as well. I'd like to take a minute and thank those that took the time to set up the tables and the tablecloths and getting everything ready for the class, and also those that have been instrumental in helping me schlep the food in from the car. How wonderful that is. It really does help if you go to three or four different places to get your stuff, to have somebody come and help you. The class tonight is being sponsored by two individuals, and I'll let Rabbi Soloveitchik talk about one. But I would like to mention that my father's yahrzeit is the 23rd of Kislev. And I should let you know what kind of a person he was. I'd like to take a minute to do that. Father was a very, very brilliant man, very, very bright man. And he was very straight. I know that his parents, his mother and father they had a kosher home, but my father didn't live an observant Jewish life. They were very poor, and for whatever reasons, I don't know what the reasons were, but he wasn't a very observant person. However, he was one of the straightest people that I've ever known. Matter of fact, he's probably the straightest person I've ever known. He taught me a career, gave me a business. He was as honest as a person can be, and he was a wonderful father, a wonderful husband, and I'm very proud to come from such parents as my mother and my father. And you should know that when I lost my dad, that was the beginning of my journey in becoming an observant Jew. I never went to Hebrew school. I had to learn Hebrew in order to say Kaddish for my father. And I did that in 30 days. I was able to say Kaddish for my father every day. And I started to learn in his name. And everything that I've done, all the mitzvahs and all the wonderful things that I have done in my life, it's in the merit of the memory of my father and my mother. And so I just wanted to say something about my father, my dad, Eliezer ben Chaim. And we're also having this class sponsored
by the Oberlanders in memory of Mrs. Oberlander's mother, I think, Rezel Bas Melech, and it should be a source for an Elias Neshama.
And the last thing that I want to say is I want to wish everybody a wonderful Hanukkah, a good year of Shabbos and a good Shabbos, a good year, a healthy year for everyone. And I'd like to thank Rabbi Berger and Young Israel for their generosity in allowing us to have this wonderful class all these years here and here in Northbrook. So I'd like to thank, even though Rabbi Berger isn't here, I'd like to thank him and the synagogue for allowing this to take place. The Moshe.
Okay. All right, this week's Sedra, I wasn't actually too sure what I would speak about till I got here, and a little bit after that also. And but Jerry asked me to speak about the situation in Israel. I'm not going to give a political speech, though, in terms of supporting anybody and not supporting anybody. Now the last pasuk in this week's Sedra talks about how Yosef is sold to Egypt, and he's ultimately he's thrown in jails. If I can use the word, with trumped up charges. Okay, so and then he interprets the dream for the Sar HaMashkim, the butler of Paro. Apparently, being Paro's butler was considered an important position in those days, and Paro's baker. And of course, the baker, we know, is executed, whereas the butler is let out from prison, and he becomes very close to Paro. He so to say has Paro's ear. You know, they always used to say. I used to hear the rabbis talk, the various rabbinical organizations in New York, and whoever, they were always concerned about who the person who would drive the whoever it'd be the Rosh Yeshiva, who, because they think that he has the biggest influence. Because he has the ear of the... matter of fact, just as a side point, when they had the Katowice conference starting Agudas Yisrael, and at that time, the two that were at the conference that were opposed to the establishment of Agudas Yisrael the way it was established was Reb Chaim, my great grandfather, and the Rashab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, and that actually they had a very close relationship. Reb Chaim, even though they came from Rashab, was one of the leaders of Hasidus, certainly in Russia, perhaps the leader, and Reb Chaim was probably the Rebbe of most of the Gdolim of his time. Of his contemporaries, Reb Chaim Ozer, all these were students. Were all students of Reb Chaim, and a number of reasons. Reb Chaim issued an 11-point letter. What he changes he would want in Agudas Yisrael for him to get involved, which of course they didn't agree to. And the way I'm told, Reb Chaim knew that they weren't going to agree to it. And I don't know what the 11 points are, but it's that I know my uncle said he saw the letter that Reb Chaim wrote to my grandfather, and he said that he would really fight the establishment of Agudas Yisrael in the same way as he fought the Maskilim, but he's older now, he doesn't have the strength. But one of the, he gave a number of reasons why he was against the establishment. Reb Chaim was against organized rabbinate. He felt every rabbi in his city, and he gave two reasons. One reason, very interesting, you know, that was the time when people were switching over from candles to electricity. He said when everybody had light, light a candle, and something went wrong in one house, the candles didn't work, whatever, he ran out of candles, whatever it was dark in one house. He says, but when you had the power station, and something went wrong in the power station, the lights went out in all the houses. And he says, so long as each rabbi was in his town, okay, so let's say he makes a mistake. So the one town is misled. But when they organize an organized rabbinate, so he says, it's like the power station going out. That was one reason he gave. And then the second reason he gave was, and this is the reason I just have reference to, he said that when you have an organized rabbinate, you have an executive director, executive vice president, and they speak in the name of the rabbis. And sometimes they put in their own feelings. One time there was a break-off from the Agudas HaRabbanim in New York, I remember. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, together with some other Rabbanim, were the leaders of the break-off. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky ultimately quit this break-off organization. What happened? They published a letter, and he was the president of the organization, and they signed his name to the letter. He had nothing against what was in the letter, but the very fact that they signed his name to the letter without telling him what was in the letter, they assumed there was nothing bad, and he felt that, and that organization fell apart almost as soon as it started because of that. So that was, and in a certain sense, this is not just true with Gdolei Yisrael, with leaders, and it's true with leaders of countries also. Very often, there are secretaries, advisors, that seem to play a bigger role in the opinion that they give, and it seems that the butler in Egypt, he had the ear of Paro, and he had a big influence. And that's why Yosef turned to him. Can you imagine Yosef turning to a waiter and telling a waiter, hey, when you serve Paro, tell Paro I'm in jail. Let me out. So we have to understand that sometimes, and I know that the people in some of the rabbinical organizations that Reb Moshe Feinstein was connected with, of course, Reb Moshe was very independent and he was in full control, but they were always scared of the people that would drive Reb Moshe. So with the influence they had, happens to be the person that drove Reb Moshe was a big Talmud Chachma, a close friend of mine, passed away a few years ago, Reb Aaron Felder. So, but he doesn't know it, but I know that people in the hierarchy of the Agudas Rabban were always scared what would be the influence that the driver has in Reb Moshe. So he was a loyal Talmud, Reb Aaron Felder, besides being a great posek and a great Talmud Chacham. And I know that people would sometimes are always scared. So the butler. So Yosef approached him. Yosef approached him, and Yosef said to him. He asked him for a favor. He asked him to mention him to Paro. But then Torah tells us, "V'lo zochar." Same. As a matter of fact, it says here, "Ki im zochar tani ita kashi itav loch v'asisunai madi chesed." So you will do me a kindness. If you will please mention me to Paro, and then you get me, he says, out of this house, out of this building, whatever it is, out of jail, out of the dungeon, whatever it is. But the last pasuk says, "Below zochar sar hamashkim es Yosef ayishkacheyu." The sar hamashkim. The butler did not remember Yosef, and he forgot him. So the question, Rashi's already troubled by it. What do you mean? Below Zachar, he didn't remember him. Vayishkecheyu, and he forgot him. What does it mean? And immediately afterwards, the next week's Sedra is Vayimikech Nasayim Yomim. It was 2 years later, and then Yosef ultimately is let out of jail. So the Medrash Rabbah there says, Ashrei, but mentions the same thing. He says, Ashrei Botech Bashem, blessed is the one who puts his trust in God, V'lo Ponel Rehovim, and did not turn to Rehovim, which is interpreted as Egyptians. V'lo Ponel Rehovim. So the Ze Yosef, that's Yosef. So that he was Boteach Bashem, it seems, but then he says, because he told the Sar Hamashkin, remember me to Paro, so he had to spend 2 extra years in jail. So it's a contradiction. The Beis Halevi asked this question. Beis Halevi gives a different answer than I'm going to give. The Beis Halevi asked a question. One hand you say, Zeh Yosef. Yosef is the Boteach Bashem, the one who has belief in God. And then you say, because he put his trust in Pyro and not in God. So you had to spend 2 years extra in jail. It's a contradiction. It's a contradiction. So how are we to understand? And then, what was the problem? What did Yosef do? Yosef asked the Sar Hamashkim, what do I do? I stand there and I say, okay, God will help me. You know, okay. Story, yeah. Yeah, so, God will help me.
The water's coming.
So, God will help me. So. I mean, there's nothing wrong. Person has to. In the Hebrew, the word is ishtatus. You can't just live it up in the air. You have to make attempts. You have to be proactive. You know, and then it's interesting. I saw brought down now one of my great grandfather Reb Chaim's students was Reb Shimon Shkup. Reb Shimon Shkup was applying to be a rabbi of the town, so he gave Reb Chaim. He was very close with Reb Chaim, so Reb Chaim said to him, "Tell me over the speech," and it had to do with this week's sedra. So it had to do, he said, the Medrash says, because Yosef said twice, Zechartani El Paro, and his Kartani you shall remember me to Paro, and you'll remember me to Paro. So because of that, he had to spend two extra years. He had to spend two extra years in jail. So Reb Chaim said to Reb Shimon Scup, what would have happened if he said it only once? How many years extra would have he had to spend? So Reb Shimon Scup said, if he only said it once, he would only have to spend 1 year. So Reb Chaim said, no. If he said it once, he wouldn't have had to spend any time in jail. But once he said it twice, it showed he had the improper attitude the first time either. In other words, basically the idea is there's nothing wrong with trying to get help. We always try to get help. We have to use political pressure. We have a responsibility to the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and for that matter, we have a responsibility for the Jews everywhere else. But the fact that we are in the United States, that gives us a special job, a special responsibility. But we have to know that when we say anything, when we say anything, we have to have our faith in God. It's not the president of the United States that's going to do it. It's not the congressman that's going to do it. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there was no problem. There was no problem what Yosef did. You have to ask. But the problem with Yosef is that he put his trust in. It's okay that he talked to the butler and asked the butler. And maybe it would come through the butler, and maybe it wouldn't come through the butler. You have to try. But you don't put your trust in politicians. You don't put your trust in human beings. Trust we can only put in God. But putting trust in God doesn't mean just sitting around and not doing anything. We have to make attempts. We have to use the term hishtadlus. We have to make efforts. We have to organize. And I think this was Yosef's problem was that he put his trust in the butler. Why did he have to be in jail 2 years? The Gemara tells us there's a rush. The rush shita is, the rush is opinion. You know, we have to, it's a mitzvah of schiras Amalek. Remember what Amalek did. And that's why every year we read Parsha Zachar. And the Rush says, why does it, he says, even not just rabbinically it has to be every year, on a Diraisa biblically it has to be every year. He says, why? He says, the Gemara says, the Talmud says, that if a person that, when somebody loses a close relative, there is a certain sense of depression, sadness, and all that. And one of the brachos, one of the blessings that God gave us is the ability not to forget. Now, I don't mean to completely forget. But, you couldn't go on in life. So, the Gemara says a person begins to forget after a year. After a year, that's when you begin to forget. So that's why there's a mitzvah of Schiras Amalek every year. In other words, because otherwise we'll forget. In a sense, the mitzvah that the Torah tells us about Amalek, Torah says, Zachrei Sasher Asolach Amalek. Remember what Amalek did. And then it concludes, Lo Sishkach, don't forget. And our sages say, Zachar Bepeh, remember orally. Lo sishchach b'lev. We can never forget. It's not enough to think once a year, oh, Amalek was bad to me. We have to constantly remember that. But if we don't oralize it, if we don't remind ourselves about it once a year, we're going to come to forget it. And in a sense, this is what the Torah is telling us, I think. V'lo zachar sar hamashkim, the sar hamashkim zachar, he didn't mention it. It's not only, and his not mentioning it not only didn't inform Paro, but he, as a result of that, forgot. But it takes a year to forget. Yosef, for a year, every day, got up in the morning and said, hey, maybe today the Sar Hamashkin, the butler, is going to remember me. You know, but if I could say the butler didn't do it. Okay, so for a year, so for every day he put his trust in the butler, he had to put a day of trust in God. And why is it? In other words, why didn't? Because that's the natural tendency of man. The natural tendency of man is that unless we remind ourselves or we remind others, the tendency is to forget. Now, Hanukkah is approaching. My uncle says something that at first seemed to be people would usually get shocked when I mention it. If you take a look at the Brisa, I know the Mizrahi, Rabbi Elazar Mizrahi, explains it differently, but if you take a look at the Brisa in the Gemara that talks about the miracle of Hanukkah and how they instituted the holiday of Hanukkah, the Brisa only mentions that this is the original mention of Hanukkah in the halachic svarim. It comes from the Megillus Tainus. So it only mentions Hallel v'Hodah. Hallel means to say Hallel. Hanukkah, we say Hallel. What's Hodah? So almost all Rishonim, there are some that say differently, but almost all Rishonim say that Hodah means to say Al Nisim. So the original decree of Hanukkah, and the Rambam says, the Chachamim shal ba'oso hador, this is the expression, u'mitnezeh, because of the miracle of Hanukkah, hiskinu Chachamim shal ba'oso hador, the Chachamim of that generation instituted, sheyu shmonas yamim u'eilu, that these 8 days, Shetchilasan Chaf Hei B'Kislev, that begin with the 25th of Kislev, Yimei Simcha V'Hallel, days of joy and Hallel. There's a question why he doesn't mention Hodai here, but the answer is it's in Hilchos Tefillah. And then he says, U'madlikin Behem, and we light on those days candles. Now the question is, the Rambam should have been consistent. The Rambam should say, the Chachamim, the wise people of that generation, the wise people of that generation instituted to institute the holiday of Hanukkah to say Hallel and to say thanks to God and to light candles. He doesn't say and to light candles. He says we light candles. Candles are lit. He doesn't say to it. He first starts off saying what the Chachamim of that generation instituted. He doesn't mention the lighting of candles. He doesn't mention the lighting of candles. So my uncle suggested, and the truth is many historians say, on this point, they say that the original celebration of Hanukkah did not involve, when I say the original, I don't mean the first year, I'm talking the first whatever years. So there was no mitzvah of lighting candles. There was no mitzvah of lighting candles. And that was instituted later. When was that instituted? So my uncle says that that was instituted when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. My uncle says that the Ramban in Parshas Bahaloscha seems to indicate that way. In other words, Zecher LeMikdash, to remember the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. To light, it reminds us of the menorah. I looked through the Ramban. It's possible that I just misunderstood the Ramban. But I don't see it in the Ramban. I don't see it in the Ramban. But I think what my uncle said could be understood. In other words, the idea is, it wasn't just to remember the Beis HaMikdash. So long as the Beis HaMikdash was there, the Beis HaMikdash served as a reminder to the Jewish people about the miracle of Hanukkah. Because the Beis HaMikdash, in a sense, was torn away from the Jewish people. So when they had it, but to be honest with you, while I agree with my uncle that from the Rambam it appears, and also I don't want to get into it, from Rashi it appears that the institution of lighting candles came later on, I don't think it was that late. And I think that's why the Rambam emphasizes. The Rambam says, the Chachamim Umnezeh Hiskinu Chachamim Sheba'osa Hador. The Chachamim of that, the elders, when I said elders, I'm talking the religious leaders. The religious leaders of that generation instituted. In other words, that generation didn't have Hanukkah candles. They had challah, and they had challah, and they had Alanisim. They had challah and Alanisim. When was candles instituted? I don't think we have to say candles were instituted after the Churban. I think the next generation. Now think about it. Think about it. You know, I don't know. My wife's not here. I think I'm about 68 years old. Huh? Okay. Anyway, so I'm almost 70. Hare ani kibben shivim shana. The Rambam Perusha Mishnah explains it different than the Gemara. He says it means he was close to 70. Okay, it's almost 70 years. The State of Israel is almost 70 years. Now, let's not talk about the world. Let us talk about ourselves. The difference in attitude regarding the State of Israel 50 years ago. That's after the Six-Day War. 60 years ago. We saw the State of Israel as being the salvation of the Jewish people after the Holocaust. But what happened? Time passed. Time passed. We don't feel the threat anymore. Passage of time makes things not a burning issue anymore. You know, I think that's the idea. The generation that was there, and I tell the Holocaust, as a young boy, I mention it all the time, because I remember, of course, I went out for Yisker, but after Yisker, they used to have to carry people out practically. People fell apart. They lost their whole families in the Holocaust. You don't see that anymore. What happened? The passage of time. If you want an issue to be dormant, if you want to, my father once told me, if you ever have to deal with an issue and you don't want what they want to plan, just tell them to give it over to the committee. So, in other words, what happens is there's a burning issue. When time passes on, it loses its fire. This is what the passage of time does. That's why they had to institute Hanukkah candles, because the generation that saw the miracles of Hanukkah, that remembered what they tolerated for over 50 years. Of course, the Greeks had control for more than that, but 50 years, the Rambam in the Igros says 50 years they suffered. Over 50 years they suffered. That generation didn't need to be reminded. But future generations, they had to remind it. So, in a sense, the miracle of Hanukkah had to undergo a re-experiencing. And the lighting of the candles was instituted to re-experience Hanukkah. You know, we can go say Hallow. We say Hallow all the holidays. But just imagine, if you could probably, if they didn't have the mitzvah of lighting candles, if somebody came to shul, if somebody happened to come to shul, he would have said hallow without even thinking about the miracle of Hanukkah. What gives us the ability, what reminds us, is the lighting of the candles. Because the tendency of man is to forget. And, you know, it's almost 70 years, I said. I'm not trying to use Pinchas' services, but the life, when the Navi talks about the life of a person, it's 70 years. We are almost at the 70-year point since the establishment of Israel. What was it? Just wait. Just wait! We're going to have peace! Smart move on the Palestinian part. Because if you say just wait, and peace is such a beautiful, beautiful concept. And my grandfather would say, we say, Bakke Shalom v'Radfehu. So that's always interpreted, search for peace and run after it. My grandfather interpreted, Bakke Shalom, search out the peace for Radfehu, because whenever they present a peace, a platform of peace, it's not for peace. Bakke, search it out, make sure it's real peace, then run after it. That is what has been happening for the last 70 years. For the last 70 years, it was running after peace without searching out the peace. We went 70 years. This is the greatest trick on the face of the earth. Be a little patient. Another year. Another 6 months. I think after 70 years, we have to, it's the next generation already. It's the next generation. When they say that lady that's the head of the Democrats in the House of Representatives, what's her name?
Pelosi.
I think she needs psychiatric help. Anyway, so.
She's not a smart woman.
I don't know about smart.
No, not at all.
Person, you watch her on TV, you see. Okay, anyway. So, anyway, so the trick, they're giving it over to a committee. That's what they're doing. And that's what the UN is. Jerry just mentioned to me what I told him that my father used to say. My father said there are two approaches to history. There is the cause and effect approach to history. The past event causes the future event. And then there's the future event causes the past event, the theological approach of history. My father used to say he would give a proof for the theological approach to history. He said, it's because the State of Israel had to come into being that the UN was started. It was the later act that caused the earlier act. And he said, what's the proof for it? The proof for it is that since then they haven't done anything. So, in other words, what is the UN? The UN is the committee. It's the committee! Submit it to the committee! And that's in its good days.
Yeah.
And there is no, they come historians without knowing history. There's no shortage of historians that don't know history. But anyway, I'm talking even when they were more rational. So it was a committee. Just. And this is how they push Israel aside. But what we have to know, Al tiftechu min hadivim ben adam shein lo tshuva teitzeruch liyoshalach mosa. We are very grateful to President Trump. We are. But we can't put our trust in any human being. Can't put our trust. Doesn't make a difference. It's the president of the president's organization. I haven't heard of them lately. Are they still around? The president's organization of American Jewry, and we can't put our trust in anybody, but we certainly have to make our hishtadlus, and our hishtadlus, our attempts have to be. We have to take a strong stand. We have to let our political power show itself. It's a good thing that the Democratic leader of the Senate comes from New York, and that places a special responsibility on the Jews in New York. Huh? Schumann. But we have a responsibility, and we say more, you know. I always discuss this question. What is our heter? The war in Israel is a mechemes mitzvah. And let me add a point while I'm at it. In the Al-Hamisim, we say, Zaydim biyad oske torasecha. Those who violate and everything, who fell in the hands of those who learned Torah. What's the idea? The idea is that even those who learned Torah recognized in this situation they had to fight. It is true. Those who learn Torah have to learn Torah. And Torah is very important. Like he said, we have to put our trust in God. But sometimes it comes as a situation, and I'm not saying that today is that situation. Sometimes it comes a situation, b'makom she'enish, mishtadlin liyosish. And you take a look, way the Rambam in the Igros describes it. Almost all the Jews became Hellenists. It was a small group that started out who led the war. And who were they? They weren't generals. They were the Kohanim. They were the ones who were sitting and learning Torah. Well, I guess those who learned Torah underneath the Greek rule probably had to have a lot of courage. So they're the ones who led. Generally, the Kohanim didn't go to war. But there are exceptions. But what bothers me is, that, and I understand, by the way, I've mentioned this before and I'll mention it again. I'm not in favor of, now, first I want to point out that my son, Yitzhak Zev, was a paratrooper in the Israeli army. So no one should think that I have this attitude. But I'm not in favor, certainly at this point, of drafting the yeshiva boys. First of all, you know, I grew up, I was a boy in America during the Vietnam War. And clergy were given a special dispensation. I think it was called a 4D, no? So we're giving a special dispensation. And we, what others give special dispensation, I think we should do the same. For, Israel should do the same for those that are sitting and learning, whatever it is, unless it becomes absolutely necessary. When it comes absolutely necessary, b'makom shein ish, mishtadlim liyosish. But you know what's causing this big problem in Israel today? What's causing the problem? I think I mentioned this. Did I mention it here? I mentioned it now. I mentioned it Shabbos in my shul. I have a cousin who lives in Washington, D.C. And she had a husband passed away recently. And I went in to Menachem Oval her. And his brother was there from Israel. He was an Israeli originally. Then he was involved in finding all kinds of cures. In fact, he was a candidate, didn't get it for a Nobel Prize. But anyway, so his brother said to me, we were talking about it, he says, you know, he lived in Tel Aviv. He says, I have a rabbi in my shul. He says, and that rabbi, he has a son. My son has to go to the army. His son doesn't have to go to the army. Why is that? And I said, well, the reason for that is, I didn't say that. I said, I want to tell you my approach. Everybody knows that. I am critical I'm not, you know, I'm not what you call a party man. In fact, I don't have any party. So, couldn't be a party man. But, I'm critical of the yeshiva attitudes. I really am. I said, but I wouldn't push the yeshiva boys into the army, certainly at this point, because my personal feeling is, besides everything else, they'll probably destroy the army. But I said, what bothers me, and this bothers me from both sides, what bothers me is that the yeshiva boys have this attitude. We don't need the army. We're protected by God. So somebody in my shul recently, I've spoken about this more than once, so he was sort of prepared for it. This person in my shul, I've spoken about it, I said, what about the yeshiva boys in Hebron in 1929? They were massacred. They were butchered. Some of them from Chicago, by the way. There weren't three survivors, I think, from Chicago. Rabbi Winchester,
Rabbi Goodman,
Rabbi Barkin. Three survivors. They were butchered. Rabbi Goodman's son told me that for 6 weeks, wow, his grandparents thought that his father was dead. I said, could they have used the army then? I said, that's an exception. Okay. And then there'll be, and I could mention other cases in Harnov. I had a cousin that was killed there, Moshe Twersky. They took an axe and they chopped his head. it's a terrible thing. I mean, it was a sad thing. They could have used the army. We don't need the army. We need protection. But on the other hand, the others have to understand. The others have to understand also that the others. By the way, my cousin was a tzaddik and a great Talmud Chacham. He probably would have been a great luminary had he lived a long lifespan. I just want to point that out. So we all need the army. But we also need the boys who are sitting and learning. We need the boys who are davening. We need all of that. The problem is that one side feels that they don't need the other side, and that goes both ways. That's the problem. We don't recognize the contribution. Believe me, if not for religious life, the state of Israel wouldn't be here today. If not for religious life, there wouldn't be a state of Israel. Both that's on a religious level and on a regular level. On the other hand, the yeshiva boys, you know, when some guy donates $50,000 to yeshiva, they make a dinner in his honor. You understand? But if he if the person gives his life to protect them, I don't need you. That's the attitude. It works both ways. Both ways there is a problem. It's problematic, but what we have to recognize, that. But the question is about us. We're living in America. What's our heter? Mechanes mitzvah hakol yotzen. Everybody goes out to fight the war of mitzvah. And if there's a war of mitzvah, it's in Eretz Yisrael. But the answer is, you know, when you have soldiers in an army, don't just shoot guns. They prepare food for the soldiers. They do all kinds of things. We in America play a unique role. It's called political pressure. And unfortunately, whereas at one time we recognized the threat, and we utilized our pressure, people are beginning to take the state of Israel for granted. And not only take it for granted, they're beginning to tolerate terrorism in Israel. It's accepted already. It's accepted already. We have to understand that the passage of time doesn't do that. It's the next generation, like Hanukkah. And it's not enough unless we remind people, unless we scream, unless we apply political pressure, everything will be taken for granted and everything will be forgotten. And that's our job. Our job is to we saw for 70 years, peace, peace, peace. Maybe if they see that we'll do something, then they might want to discuss peace. But we shouldn't fool ourselves. 70 years, we have to be on guard that it shouldn't become something accepted. And this is the idea of V'lo Zachar Sahar Mashkin. If we won't remind ourselves, and if we won't remind others, Vayishkechedo, they will forget.
Thank you.
I'd like to just take a second. We're going to be davening in about 2 or 3 minutes. I want to thank everybody for coming. Please leave the tablecloths
on the tables, and please remove whatever you can and throw it into the garbage bin.